in Iraq, the Ansarullah in Yemen, have become stronger than ever. They have become independent and are now fighting back. The days of the Zionist regime attacking Palestinians and then back with a stone have ended.
Mr. Navi, I apologize to jump in there. We're fresh out of time for tonight's program. Allow me to thank my guests, Sadi Mormick joining us from Manchester and Mr. Mohsen Naghvi speaking to us from Houston, Texas. And also special thanks to you for staying with us on Spotlight.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now, we enlighten you with verses 40 to 43 of chapter Al-Baqarah from the Holy Quran, recited by Ali Parhizgar.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. يا بني إسرائيل اذكروا نعمتي التي أنعمت عليكم وأوفوا بعهدي أوف بعهدكم وَأَوْفُوا بِعَهْدِي أُوفِ بِعَهْدِكُمْ وَإِيَّايَ فَارْهَبُونِ وَآمِنُوا بِمَا أَنزَلْتُ مُصَدِّقًا لما معكم ولا تكونوا أول كافر به ولا تشتروا بآياتي ثمنا قليلا وإياي فاتقون ولا تلبسوا الحق بالباطل وتكتموا الحق وأنتم تعلمون وأقيموا الصلاة وآتوا الزكاة واركعوا مع الراكعين صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. O children of Israel, call to mind my favor which I bestowed on you, and be faithful to your covenant with me. I will fulfill my covenant with you, and of me alone, should you be afraid. And believe in what I have revealed, verifying that which is with you, and be not the first to deny it, neither take a mean price in exchange for my communications, and me alone should you fear. And do not mix up the truth with the falsehood, nor hide the truth while you know it. And keep up prayer, and pay the poor rate, and bow down with those who bow down.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines this hour. Rival factions in Sudan clash for the second day as the civilian death toll from the violence reaches 56. Israeli demonstrators once again gather in Tel Aviv to denounce judicial reforms proposed by the right-wing cabinet despite a decision to delay the process. And French police are caught on camera using disproportionate force against protesters in the northwestern city of Rennes. Welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Muniz. Thanks for joining us. Rival factions in Sudan clash for the second day as the death toll from the violence reaches 56. Witnesses say heavy fighting is underway in the capital, Khartoum, as well as the cities of Omdurman, Port Sudan, and Bahri. The army has also launched airstrikes on a base belonging to the paramilitary rapid support force known as the RSF near the capital, Khartoum. The RSF claimed to have seized the presidential palace, the army chief's residence, state television station, and airports in Khartoum. The army has rejected those assertions. The Sudanese Doctors Union says at least 56 civilians and scores of military personnel have been killed and nearly 600 injured so far. The fighting follows weeks of tensions between military leader Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and the RSF over the planned integration of the group into the regular army. We were earlier joined by political commentator Sami Hamdi and asked him about the root cause of the ongoing fighting in Sudan.
I think first and foremost, it's important to remember the context within which this is taking place, which is that you have a transition taking place in Sudan in which the parties are trying to come to some sort of agreement regarding power sharing and also trying to pressure Burhan, the head of the military council, to hand over power to civilian parties. Burhan has dragged his heels primarily because he's aware that the handover of power is essentially to civilian parties that he believes, and the civilian parties themselves believe, would not be able to win any seats or would not be able to win a majority in any election. The civilian parties, as part of pressuring Burhan to hand over power to him, sought to rally around Himiti, the head of the rapid support forces. They sought to rally around him and essentially tried to coax him into toppling Burhan for them and then agreeing to a power share and transition agreement in which they were able to seize 66% of the parliament and in which they were able to embark on ideological changes to the state before going to an elections at a time in which they believe they could win. Burhan knew that they were rallying around Himmity, so Burhan arranged his own process through which he managed to get more civilian parties to join the process to dilute the power of the other civilian parties, but also imposed a condition whereby the rapid support forces would have to give up much of its influence in exchange for a transition in which Burhan shares power. So Himmity, believing that Burhan is going to take away some of his power, has decided that now is the time to act. He's moved his forces to try to topple Burhan in order essentially to oust Burhan from the game entirely and to impose himself before Burhan has a chance to rein him in and essentially clip his wings.
Political analyst Jonathan Ofeansa says struggles between the army and the RSF have casted a shadow on the transition of power to a civilian government.
Tensions between the regular army and the RSF go back a long way, since the days of the deposed president al-Bashir, but tensions have since remained. General Dagalo, who heads the RSF, is the deputy head of the sovereign military council that is ruling the country at present. So the tension actually is between the army and the paramilitary, which stems from how the two sides should merge. Mm-hmm. The regular army, the army itself, I think, is prepared to hand over power. But from what is happening now, it appears the RSF is rather reluctant to do so. Because right now, it appears all the signs point to a military coup, because they've taken the airport, they've taken the most of the military bases in the capital, and so on and so forth. So it appears there is a military coup, and should it succeed, it will set back the planned transition to civilian rule.
Israel plans to implement some 10 major settlement projects in the occupied outlets in the West Bank. The projects include the construction of hundreds of new settler units and the expansion of some of the already constructed settlements. As part of the plans, the regime also intends to build roads as well as a major tunnel under the Kalandia checkpoint north of outlets to connect settlements in the occupied territories. Tel Aviv gave the go-ahead for the projects back in 2017. Experts see such projects as part of Israel's land grab policy. People have rallied for the 15th consecutive week in Tel Aviv to protest against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's proposed judicial overhaul. The protesters held signs and chanted slogans against the far-right Israeli cabinet. They urged Netanyahu to scrap the legislation despite his decision to delay the process. In recent weeks, protesters have clashed with regime forces across the occupied territories. The demonstrations erupted in January after the cabinet announced its reforms to limit the Supreme Court's powers. Critics argue that the changes will foster corruption and bring about diplomatic isolation. Israeli forces have attacked Christians celebrating the Orthodox Holy Light ceremony in the old city of Al-Quds. The attacks occurred when thousands of Orthodox Christians filled the Old City under heavy presence of regime forces. Israel has significantly limited access to the event, citing safety concerns. Church leaders, however, have urged Christians to ignore the restrictions, calling the measure part of long-standing efforts by the regime to push out the local Christian community. Some church leaders have also voiced concern over what they describe as an environment of impunity in the face of rising acts of violence and vandalism targeting Christians and their properties in Al-Quds. Palestinian resistance movement, the Islamic Jihad, has condemned Israel's attack, describing it as a racist and a violation of the rights of Christian citizens. Earlier, our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kandil, told us that the so-called Israeli safety measures are only meant to bar the Palestinian Christians from entering the old city of Al-Quds.
let's say, the Orthodox Palestinian Christians are celebrating today one of their major holidays, the Orthodox Holy Light Ceremony, that where Christians go to Al-Quds and visit the secular church there. From the early hours of Saturday, Palestinian Christians are prohibited. Only, let's say, Christians from around the world are allowed. The church, we consider this move as another attempt by the Israelis to attack the Palestinians and to continue to practice more aggressive measures against Palestinians. And they said it's an opportunity to tell the whole world that Palestinians, whether they are Christians or Muslims, are under Israeli attack, because at the end of the day, Israel wants to impose more facts on ground and more more facts on ground to tell the world that Al-Quds would be occupied by the Israelis, by the Jewish Israelis, and that Palestinians, regardless of their religion, they are not welcome there, or they have to live under the Israeli measures and under the Israeli rules.
People across Thailand have marked International Good Day by voicing their support for the oppressed Palestinian nation. Protests were held in front of the Israeli regime's embassy in the capital, Bangkok. The demonstrators condemned regime crimes and aggression against Palestinians. Similar rallies were held elsewhere across the country. Thai Muslims also marked the occasion by holding gatherings in several mosques. International Quds Day was established by the late founder of Iran's Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, in 1979. It aims to maintain and raise awareness about the plight of the Palestinian people and their struggle. People across the world have marked International Quds Day. There has been a massive turnout, with people coming out to show solidarity with Palestinians. Meanwhile, Iran has said that Palestine and the holy city of Al-Quds have turned into symbols of unity in the Muslim world. International Quds Day Rallies 2023. Massive crowds fill the streets of all major cities in the Islamic Republic. The show of support for Palestinians was astounding. But these rallies were not limited to just Iran. This year, more people came out in support of Al-Quds Day, an occasion designated by the late founder of Iran's Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, over 40 years ago. One day prior to the event, Iran and several Arab countries like Lebanon, Syria, Yemen, and Iraq held naval parades, something not done in the past. Then came the show of support by resistance groups and religious leaders.
It is enough for the Arabs and the Muslims in the world, and all the peoples of the world. And also, Al-Quds has its significance for Palestine, and this is part and parcel of the religious duties. In this state, we need to shoulder the efforts to support the West Bank and Al-Quds.
But why was this Quds Day different? For starters, the Al-Aqsa Mosque was the scene of multiple violations and desecrations by Israeli forces and settlers. The beating of Palestinian worshippers brought world condemnation against Israel and its officials. In the spotlight, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and extreme far-right minister Itamar Ben-Gvir. When it came to the issue of Al-Quds, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was forced to announce that the Al-Aqsa Mosque would be limited only to Palestinian worshippers until the end of the holy month of Ramadan. His minister, Itamar Ben-Gvir, slammed the move. Many saw that as a sign of a further rift with Netanyahu.
International Quds Day has one common theme worldwide. That is, solidarity with Palestinians in their fight against the Israeli occupation.
Never before, Israel is finding itself to be isolated and weak. On the one hand, Israel is unraveling from within. Strikes and protests against the so-called judicial reforms have extended to over 3 months now. Meanwhile, Israelis are leaving Israel en masse. On the other hand, the economy is being battered. Massive capital flights, investor confidence at an all-time low. After all, who wants to invest in an economy where there are massive protests in which the fate of the ruling coalition is not known? His partnership with what some have called fascists and extremists has deteriorated Israel's standing, even with its staunchest allies, especially the U.S. A group of U.S. senators have urged the U.S. president not to use taxpayers' money in Israeli settlements and to stop violating Palestinian rights. According to a recent poll by Gallup, for the first time, more Democrats sympathize with Palestinians than they do with Israelis. 49% of Democrats answered that they sympathize more with Palestinians, an 11-point increase over the past year. Meanwhile, Israel is facing an unprecedented national security threat from resistance groups. Recently, a barrage of rockets from resistance groups from southern Lebanon was met with a counterfire from Israel, which only targeted open areas, in fear of not getting involved in a war, especially with Hezbollah. And a further threat to Israel, the geopolitical shift in West Asia from Iran's reconciliation with Saudi Arabia has thrown Israel's security to a state of red alert. Israeli hopes of normalization with Saudi Arabia appear to be dashed, at least for now. Counting on Arab-Israeli alliance in the face of Iran and the axis of resistance is over, said the Hezbollah chief, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah. As a result of Iran-Saudi normalization, the axis of resistance has been recalibrated, especially with Syria coming back into the fold. 21 years ago, George Bush uttered these words in his State of the Union address.
States like these and their terrorist allies constitute an axis of evil, arming to threaten the peace of the world.
Ironic that now those words hold true for the U.S. and Israel, especially when it comes to their presence in the West Asia region.
French police have been caught on camera using disproportionate force against protesters in the northwestern city of Rennes. Footage from the incident shows riot police handcuffing a man and a woman while restraining them. Eyewitnesses said the man was wrestled to the ground after he tried to help the woman, who was being dragged on the ground. It took place during a demonstration where police fired tear gas to disperse protesters. France has seen months of violent protests over the government's controversial plan to raise the retirement to age 64. President Emmanuel Macron signed the bill into law on Saturday. This has angered unions, which have called for the demonstrations to continue. South Africa is making moves to send a stronger message to isolate Israel. Marking Lutz Day, they believe the global political reality also brings liberation of outlets closer. Hassan Seria reports.
Under the watchful gaze of South Africa's own anti-apartheid icons, they came out to highlight the plight of the Palestinian people again. For decades, many of those here have marched annually to the gates of Parliament, demanding decisive action from the government, which itself fought a racist supremacist regime once.
We need to break diplomatic ties with Israel, as well as economic ties with them. They should become a pariah state. We shouldn't have any sort of diplomatic visits to Israel, as well as from Israel. And they should be made to feel demonized on a global scale.
In a groundbreaking move just weeks ago, Parliament passed a motion to downgrade ties with the Israeli regime. But questions remain whether the ANC-led government will see this through. After years of advocating neutrality, South Africa took a more resolute stance against Israel at the African Union, preventing the Zionist regime from gaining observer status. Representatives from the ruling party participated in the International Quds Day march to Parliament here and agreed more needs to be done.
We need legal action, both from the United Nations. There's a duplicity of especially Western countries around this matter. It's very clear that Israel is being isolated on this. The Middle East is coming too. There's a strong, overwhelming critical mass of all countries and freedom-loving people saying that enough is enough and this atrocities must stop. So we as South Africa, we call on this. We believe this. We will be continuing to fight for the cause of the Palestinian people.
South Africa withdrew its ambassador from Israel in 2018, but the Israeli ambassador still enjoyed full diplomatic status here. The parliamentary motion pledges to expel Tel Aviv's representative and downgrade the embassy to a liaison office. Underpinned by the vision of International Quds Day for those who have protested here annually, the latest moves are a victory indeed. Hassan Siri, Cape Town.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day from 15:20 to 16:20 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day from 19:20 to 20:20 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sador Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
On Sundays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. In the name of Allah, from whom I hope for nothing but bounty, and from whom I fear nothing but justice. I rely only upon His word, and I cling only to His cord. In Thee I seek sanctuary, O possessor of pardon and good pleasure. From wrong and enmity, and from the changes of time, and the recurrence of sorrows, and from the striking of mishaps, and from the expiration of my term before preparation and readiness. From Thee I seek guidance to that wherein is righteousness and being set right. From thee I seek help in that which is linked to success and favorable response. Thee I beseech for the garment of well-being and its completion, and for the covering of health and its permanence. I seek refuge in thee, my Lord, from the goadings of the Satans. And I seek protection in thy sovereignty from the injustice of the sovereigns. So accept my past prayers and fasting, and make my tomorrow and what is after better than my present hour and my today. And exalt me in my clan and my people, and protect me in my waking and my sleeping. For thou art Allah, the best guardian, and thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, I am quit before thee on this day of mine and on all Sundays that follow it, of associating others with thee and of heresy. And I devote my supplication sincerely to thee, addressing myself to thy response. And I observe the acts of obedience to you for the hope of your rewards. So, bless Muhammad, the best of thy creation, the summoner to thy truth. Exalt me with thy exaltation, which is never made to suffer loss. And protect me with thy eye, which never sleeps. And seal my affair by cutting me off from everything but thee and my life with forgiveness. Surely, thou art the all-forgiving, the all-compassionate.
God's Month. In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Salam and welcome to another episode of this series. God says in part of Ayah 69 of Surah Ma'idah, those who have faith in Allah and the Last Day and act righteously, they will have no fear nor will they grieve. Dear listeners, this is the calm and tranquility that Allah has promised the faithful. This calm will keep them from any worry. Feeling secure is the root of all bounties. Many ayahs and statements of the Prophet and the Imams stress that security is originated in faith in God, and that, on the contrary, feeling insecure and anxiety stem from unfaith. In continuation of Dua Iftitah, Imam Mahdi says, all praise belongs to Allah, who makes the fearful and rescues the righteous. Faith in God and being certain that everything is in His power bring calm to the heart. This calm then prevails in society and makes it secure against worries and fears. Religion teaches us that the universal calm and security will materialize only during the rule of Imam Mahdi, may God expedite his reappearance. God promises the materialization of a secure society in Ayah 55 of Surah Nur. Allah has promised those of you who have faith and do righteous deeds that will surely make them successors in the earth, just as He made those who were before them successors, and will surely establish for them their religion, which He has approved for them, and that He will surely change their state to security after their fear while they worship Me. The great exegete of the 20th century, Allama Sayyid Muhammad Hussein Tabatabai, writes in this ayah, "This ayah is a beautiful promise to the faithful who do righteous deeds. They have been promised that soon a righteous society will be formed and God will give the authority of the earth to those who were the weak and oppressed. He will replace their fear with security in a way that they will be immune from the stratagem of the hypocrites and the unfaithful. They will worship God freely and will not associate anything with Him. God considers the establishment of such a righteous government under the condition of formation of the religion which He has chosen for the faithful, and that is the religion of the last prophet, namely Islam." Islam is not a personal and isolationist religion. It is a social religion whose ultimate aim is to establish justice and security for all. God, who is introduced by Islam, is not merely the God of individuals, but the God of society and universal civilization too. He has ordained and proclaimed His rules and regulations in a way that human beings would be ready for reaching the ideal society. He is the great God who is satisfied with greatness for His servants. In view of this, the servants are as great as their goals and concerns. He who thinks of reformation of all has a much greater and loftier goal than the one who is just concerned of his personal affairs. Of course, the reformation of individuals will take place through reformation of the society. This is the ultimate goal which God likes. The Imam of the age continues in Dua Iftitah, supplication of opening and starting, and brings up the downtrodden and bring down the arrogant. Here, Imam Mahdi praises Allah, who take up who have been kept weak and abased, while bringing down those who are haughty and arrogant. Today, human community has become insecure owing to the difference in ideologies and fanatic thoughts. These man-made creeds and schools have made planet Earth an insecure place for mankind. Although human communities have made progress, their progress and growth have not been balanced. In spite of scientific progresses, immorality and insecurity are on the rise. In an unbridled way, monopoly and arrogance have corrupted mankind. The history of Europe and the United States of America shamefully revealed that the current progresses have been shaped on boundless crimes and oppression. The wealth of the rich in Europe and the US has been achieved at the price of starvation, slavery, and massacre of hundreds of millions of humans in the four continents. Silence against injustice is pure injustice. History should be written again, not by those who have occupied and usurped the lands of weak nations, but by the weak nations themselves. We should not be content with the progress built on blood. The rule of Imam Mahdi will end this disgraceful history, and there won't be any trace of oppression, occupation, usurpation, and exploitation.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Eye on Islam.
Assalamu alaikum, peace be upon you, and welcome to another edition of Eye on Islam, the show where we look at current affairs through an Islamic lens. Each week, we'll look at a trending news story which has a direct relevance to the religion of Islam, and we'll break it down from a Muslim perspective. As we approach the end of Ramadan, our attentions turn to one of the most important religious and political causes facing the Ummah, the ongoing occupation of Palestine and the oppression of our brothers and sisters by the Zionist regime. And on the last Friday of Ramadan, Muslims and non-Muslims all over the world commemorate Al-Quds Day, as the following report explains.
International Al-Quds Day was proposed in 1979 by Iranian leader Ayatollah Khomeini and was welcomed by the Islamic world and all nations who condemned the loss of Palestinian rights. Imam Khomeini dubbed the Zionist entity a cancerous tumour planted in the heart of the Islamic Ummah by force, so it must be removed. And this is the official stance of the Islamic Republic of Iran today. Al-Quds Day falls on the last Friday of the Muslim fasting month of Ramadan, during which rallies are held in cities around the world to keep alive the notion of resistance till the freedom of Palestine from the clutches of the Zionist usurpers. Towards the end of the 19th century, the creation of the Zionist movement resulted in many European Jews immigrating to Palestine. Gradually, they took over vast swathes of land through land purchases, terrorism, ethnic cleansing, and war until the establishment of Israel in 1948. Since then, they've maintained control of historic Palestine through occupation, oppression, and war with the help of the West and complicity of Arab nations. Iran gives the Palestinians political, media, moral, material, and military support, resistance in all its forms. And among the most significant support is the Day of Al-Quds, when millions around the world take to the streets to support the Palestinian issue and to confirm the Pledge of Allegiance with Jerusalem Al-Quds.
Well, joining us in the studio today to talk about Al-Quds Day, we have two esteemed guests. Masoud Shajarey is the chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission and one of the organisers of the Al-Quds Day March here in London. And Sheikh Ahmed Hanif, a Muslim scholar and lecturer based here in the UK, leading the way in upholding Al-Quds Day both in person and in principles. Gentlemen, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you, of course. Masoud, I'm going to come straight to you on this because obviously you've played a key role in organising the march here in London for many, many years. Just tell us why this day is unique, because there are many days in solidarity for the Palestinian cause within the Muslim world. Why is this day itself so unique and so important? And also, perhaps you could just tell us how it's evolved over the past, 20-something years?
Well, it's unique because it was the first sort of such international day which was organised to rise up a challenge against Zionism and apartheid, illegal occupation. And so therefore, it's really significant from that point of view. It's significant because it brings all sorts of people from different backgrounds, from the Jewish community, Christian community, and people of no faith, and indeed Muslims, together on a Muslim platform. Because it's very important. We get in lots of other days which are platform organized by others and we all join in. But this is actually a Muslim platform. And it's significant of it being in the month of Ramadan when we are getting closer to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We are fasting, we are concentrating on spirituality. And that spirituality should lead to a greater commitment to freeing the oppressed people, indeed the Palestinians, which have been oppressed for over 70 years. And I think from that point of view, it putting all those together, it indeed is a very significant and unique day.
Sheikh Hanif, obviously this day was founded by Imam Khomeini. It was founded within the Islamic Republic of Iran, but it's by no means a Muslim-only day. As Masoud mentioned, many Jews participate in the day, Christians as well, non-Muslims essentially. Could you just tell us about the concept of Al-Quds Day in the mind of Imam Khomeini? What do you think he intended when he started this day?
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. I think one of the things that's the most important thing from my point of view that describes Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alai, is the idea that religion is not separate from politics. You know, religion is not separate from the struggle for justice in the world. And when we look at all of the prophets and so on, we see that particular thing taking place. And in the modern period, you know, we have this the propagation of this idea that religion is something otherworldly or at best just simply, you know, being a good person in the society. And Ramadan being the most spiritual month, if one can say that, in the Muslim community, Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi, called for the last Friday, which is a very significant day in the month of Ramadan, to be the day of Al-Quds, to remind Muslims that part of your struggle or part of your spiritual effort is not just only in the immaterial aspects, but also in the material aspects of our existence, especially when it comes to not only politics or ideas of oppression and so on that are represented with other people, but also with respect to Muslims themselves.
Now, Masoud, as of recently, at the time of this recording, Al-Aqsa has once again come under renewed attack from the Israeli regime. This is something which happens every single year, as far back as I can remember it. Al-Aqsa is attacked. And of course, on a daily basis, even outside of the Holy Month, we have attacks on Palestinians taking place routinely. Could you just comment on this recent attack and why this type of day, Al-Quds Day, is important in a way of combating, hitting back amid this ongoing oppression that we're witnessing?
You actually put your finger on it. The reality is that the Zionist illegal occupation and apartheid targets the religiosity of the Muslims and their sort of a special religious period. That's why day in, day out, year after year, they're attacking Palestinians in one of the holiest places in the Islam on this month and targeting them. So it actually sort of shows that the issue, they use every possible excuse to undermine and to remove the confidence of the Palestinians to feel belong to that land. And that's well organized. So therefore, we need to rise up. You know, when we actually say that we need to come out on Al-Quds Day to support Palestinians, when we say we should fly the flag of Palestine, when they're banning Palestinians to fly their own flag, and all these things, we need to rise up to these challenges. You know, we should be carrying the Palestinian flag every day with us, you know, on our car, on our houses, and everything else. And we need to be the voice of the voiceless of Palestinians. And I think we also need to recognize that it's not just Palestinians as an ethnic nation are being targeted. Palestinians are being targeted because they are Muslim and their Islamic identity of them is being targeted because they see that as a reason that they are resisting and are able to resist, both spiritually and indeed politically.
Sheikh Hanif, perhaps you could explain, because it's no coincidence that this particular day, Al-Quds Day, was founded in Iran. Iran has a long history of supporting the Palestinian cause. Perhaps you could detail that relationship. Why is it that Iran is so keen to support the Palestinian?
Well, I think it goes back again to the role of Imam Khomeini and the thoughts of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh, in the sense that the most fundamental role of religion is twofold. You know, one is a spiritual and one is the physical, or we call it the socioeconomic, the political, and so forth, you see. And this is the point of view that led to the establishment of an Islamic state in Iran. You know, if they were only in one group, or in one way of thinking, you would not have had this unique phenomenon, you know, where it has the spiritual aspect, the religious aspect, and also the political aspect, because really both of them are one. And the other thing about him was the internationalism of Imam Khomeini, you know, that they saw in Iran that they were part of a worldwide international movement against neocolonialism and imperialism, which is what we are seeing today. Neocolonialism and imperialism is still very much alive in the world today, you see. And so basically, it was a way where he woke people up to this reality. And because of this, we have this international movement of the Quds Day.
And of course, very briefly, the revolution was based on freeing Iranians from the clutches of Western imperialistic hold over Iran. And unfortunately, the Palestinians still find themselves in a similar situation. So it makes sense that Iran would, of course, offer their solidarity in that sense. But before we continue this discussion any more so, Al-Quds Day is not just a Muslim event by any means. There are many non-Muslims who raise the banner of Palestine every year, including Jews. At last year's Al-Quds Day march, we spoke to a religious Orthodox Jew who opposes the regime in Tel Aviv. Let's hear what he had to say.
We're here today as members of the Orthodox Jewish community, and we're here to say that the authentic Jewish Orthodox opinion is that the whole existence of the State of Israel is against our teaching and against what is we consider to be correct. Our teaching is that we, the Jewish people, have to live as loyal citizens in whichever country they find themselves, including Palestine. And Palestine really belongs to the indigenous population, which is the Palestinians. And to take it away from them is, in effect, a criminal activity which is caused ever since it started, going back 100 years, has caused one continuous chain of bloodshed and suffering for the people who are there, including the Jewish people. Entirely misguided. The Al-Quds demonstration is in support of the Palestinians in their fight against Zionism. Zionism is a totally different philosophy to Judaism. Zionism is a false secular philosophy. Judaism is an age-old religion. Being against Zionism is being against falsehood. Nothing to do with anti-Semitism at all. Anti-Semitism is an old, bigoted hatred of Judaism, which of course should of Jews, which should be opposed. But being against a movement which is false and which is murderous and causing suffering, that's not anti-Semitism. Well, I want to tell my brothers and sisters that they should understand that we are here in their interest. It is for their benefit and for everybody's benefit that we live in peace together with the Palestinians and give the Palestinians their full right to which they are entitled.
3, 4, occupation, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Well, there you have it. Obviously an incredibly important day for Palestinians, but also for non-Palestinians as well, religious Jews who find the day important to give themselves a voice amid ongoing oppression against even religious Jews that live in occupied Palestine and lived in peace alongside their Arab neighbours prior to 1948. Masood, I want to ask you about the day, especially as it's organised here in Europe, because it's under attack. It has been for a number of years now. I think you mentioned before that it's been banned in Germany. I think that there are many groups hoping that it'll be banned here in London as well. Just tell me, why is it that the day is being attacked the way it is?
Well, because it has, it exposes Zionism, it exposes apartheid, it exposes the brutal illegal occupation. And it's becoming more popular. I mean, more people in Britain, in the United States, and the rest of the Western world are awakening to this. More people are awakening in the Muslim world, you know. Despite the fact that the so-called normalization of the leadership of some of these oppressive regimes, the masses are actually understanding. And this whole process of demonization and trying to stop it is to silence people. But they are demonizing it in such a way that this is barbaric, this is terrorism, this is blah, 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 etc. And it leads to huge difficulties. I mean, do you remember Osborne, who attacked the Finsbury Park Mosque? He drove his van into people and killed innocent worshippers. He came to London, according to the court hearing, he came to London to target Al-Quds Day. And if he had managed to do that, he could have actually killed a lot of men, women and children who are being extremely peaceful. I mean, one of the things which has been identified by the police and the mayor's office and everybody else is that all these years, Al-Quds Day has been a family gathering, peaceful, no violence, nothing. And they want to destroy that. They are propagating hate to such an extent that enables someone like that, you know, from one part of UK, drive all the way down to target this. And this is the preachers of hate which are promoting that. And I think what we need to do is come together, which we are. I mean, Convenencia is a combination of Muslim, Jews, Christians, and others, which are not just opposing a state of Israel, but actually saying that the solution is that we all live together and all of us sort of combat and stand against injustice and oppression and apartheid. And I think it's not just standing against the Zionist sort of warmongers, but is actually coming up with a solution that how we could continue living a peaceful coexistence together.
It does seem funny to me that one of the accusations that's thrown at the day routinely is that it's anti-Semitic, it's an anti-Semitic march. Yeah, we just heard from a religious Orthodox Jew speaking at the demonstration, and surely he'd be welcome or feel safe there if it was an anti-Semitic demonstration. So clearly there's a lot of issues there. Before I come back to you, Masood, I want to bring in Sheikh Hanif once again, because there is another accusation which is thrown at Iran, particularly from its critics, that its support for the Palestinian cause is basically a PR move. That's why they're ultimately interested in it. It just makes them look good in the Muslim world, something along those lines. What's your response to that?
Well, a PR move is essentially simplistic and shallow. What we find is the opposite with respect to Iranian support for the movement against Zionism in Palestine. They support them financially. They support them militarily. They support them diplomatically. They support them in every way possible. These are real, real issues. And they suffer for that, you see, in terms of being demonized in the media and so forth. When you want to compare PR moves, you really should look at the Gulf states in terms of their relationship with Palestine and Palestinians. One of the things I think, people tend to sort of they tend to be against the Quds March has to do also with the role of demonstrations in terms of drawing attention to this, and demonstrations in terms of bringing other people, making people ask questions. You know, I think what we need to do is to be more organized, not necessarily organized, but, more sort of, able to exploit the demonstration in the full sense of the word. You know, I mean, in the 60s, for example, a demonstration was not only to attract people, but it was also to teach people. So you'd find at the end of a demonstration, what you had was teachings. You know, they'd rent church basements, church halls, mosques, community halls and that type of thing. So after the demonstration, people could get together, and talk about it and so forth. You know, and in this way, you tend to sort of bring more people into it. And the Islamic Revolution and the Islamic government has really instituted that type of initial move in terms of us getting together and trying to popularize the entire movement.
There does seem to be a real lack of communication in the sense, if you compare it to, say, the communication that's going on regarding the suffering in Ukraine. There's a massive amount of attention given to it from mainstream media sources and from organizations as well, charities and this type of thing. They're all talking about Ukraine right now because of the suffering there. When it comes to the Palestinian cause, there seems to be a lack of focus on it, even among some Muslim scholars based here in the West. You just don't hear them talk or even tweet about it that much. Do you think that that's a real issue?
Yes, I think it's a real issue in the sense that, first of all, the popularization of one point of view in Ukraine is basically part of government policy, and Western involvement and encouragement of that war in Ukraine to try to demonize Russia, as a target. And we find this type of stuff taking place in a lot of cases where they try to encourage people's sympathy for one side and enmity towards the other. When you find things like Palestine, Native American, troubles with their land and so forth, pipelines going through their territories and so forth, not being popularized, we realize that the press itself is the corporate press, to be more precise, it does not have the interests of international justice at heart. They have the interest. The defense of these efforts by portraying them conveniently under things like freedom and human rights and so forth, whilst at the same time denying the rights of others. And so you find that this Osborne incident, for example, as Brother Shajari had pointed out, are people who are the victims of that type of propaganda. But today what we find is also, truth must come out. You know, and you find that a lot of alternative views are presented on social media and among people and so on. And even people looking at the images that the corporate media themselves present, like, for example, people being beaten up savagely in Al-Aqsa and so forth, tends to create thinking in the minds of people that go against the propaganda campaigns of the corporate media in this society.
Masood, we have about a minute left until the end, unfortunately, so I want to give this last moment to yourself. Perhaps you could remind our dear viewers why Al-Quds Day is so important, because there are many days for Palestine, but Al-Quds Day to me seems to be the one last bastion of total support, so not just the Palestinian cause, but the Palestinian resistance effort as well.
Look, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, how could you not rise up and stand in support of those who are praying and saying, Ya Allah, send us a supporter and send us helper. Now, this is to every single one of us. And we can't go through the month of Ramadan getting closer to Allah and then ignoring this command of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So those of us who are Muslim, we need to do that. Those of us who are not Muslim, we need to do that, because if we don't, the humanity has died within us. But I also say that, you know, yes, the propaganda is against us, the politics is against us, we are being demonized, all these things. But despite that, we are able to rise up and be counted. This is a day that we need to rise up and be counted. And this is why today we are sending letters to all the ulama and all the masajids, reminding that while our Palestinians are suffering in this month, it is our duty to rise up, boycott Israeli goods, fly the flag, come to Al-Quds Day, and support the Palestinians with our financial help. If we don't, we are not really answering the call of Allah.
I think that's a very powerful point to end on there. Thank you to both of you for joining me in the studio today. And thank you at home for joining us as well. But unfortunately, that is all the time we have for this edition of On Islam. But don't worry, we'll be back again next week for another show. But for now, it's Salaamu Alaikum.
The criminalization of